It's Monday, July 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Democrats prepare for an historic presidential nomination. The International Olympic Committee makes a decision on Russian athletes in Rio.
Overall, the general sense was that the outlook remains uncertain.
G20 finance ministers conclude meetings in China. Also ahead, a continent-wide passport is suggested, and social media means big popularity and big money in the music world. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. Democrats are gathering in Philadelphia for their national convention, set to affirm former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton as the party's 2016 presidential nominee, the first time a major U.S. political party is picking a woman as its standard bearer. But the convention is beginning on a discordant note. WikiLeaks disclosed nearly 20,000 emails from Democratic Party leaders over the last year and a half showed that they mocked and criticized an upstart campaign of Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders while he was waging an unexpectedly tough challenge to Clinton over months of state-by-state contests for the nomination. Some Democratic leaders called for the resignations of party officials, including Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who made objectionable comments about Sanders thought to be in private emails. She indeed now plans to step down after the convention. Meanwhile, Mrs. Clinton has selected Virginia Senator and former Governor Tim Kaine as her vice presidential running mate. Kaine has wasted no time in describing how Hillary Clinton is different compared to the themes presented by Republican candidate Donald Trump.
America was not built on fear. America was not built on fear. It was built on courage, on imagination, and on an unbeatable determination to do the job at hand.
Mr. Trump acknowledged that critics viewed his presidential nomination acceptance speech in Cleveland, Ohio, as a little dark, but said that he thought it was very optimistic because he says, quote, we're going to fix the problems. He felt the raucous convention in the end brought Republicans together.
This was probably one of the most peaceful, one of the most beautiful, one of the most love-filled conventions in the history of conventions. And when they talk about unity, I want to tell you, that was unity. That was unity, right?
Well, as Democrats gather, we turn to VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman for thoughts on some of these developments.
Donald Trump delivered his acceptance speech. It went on for quite a bit longer than an hour. It was one of the longer speeches that anyone has had to listen to at a convention. But it wrapped up a fairly, you know, bombastic and at times very much unscripted national convention, which is not the norm. And if you like to mix things up, I suppose you might have been happy with it.
Well, Trump basically saying, you got me, whether you want me or not, accepting the nomination and then going on to tell us everything that's wrong.
And everything that we should fear,
mm-hmm.
including trade deals, undocumented immigrants, terrorists, the list just sort of went on and on and on. And that gave Hillary Clinton, the Democratic nominee-to-be, a perfect opportunity to draw some contrasts. And Jim, I think that we're going to see a lot of contrasts drawn going through Thursday on the Democratic side of things.
She has a lot of positives that she can highlight, and her pick for vice president is a fairly conservative pick, you may say, a safe pick in the sense that Tim Kaine, who is the former governor of Virginia, is not terribly far to the left at all. He's a moderate, but he should appeal to a wide base of voters, which is exactly what she needs.
Tim Kaine, who is currently serving as the senator of Virginia, has been many things, but he is not someone who lends a great deal of pizzazz to the ticket. I spent a couple of years speaking with Tim Kaine off and on in the halls of Congress. He's very accommodating. He strikes you as a genuinely nice man. But he's not the most electrifying speaker. And you can almost see the wheels turning in the Clinton operation in terms of picking him. They obviously, coming out of the Republican National Convention, did not feel that a huge amount of pizzazz and excitement was needed. What they wanted to double down on is the idea of competence, of experience, of governing capability. And Tim Kaine has that in spades. He has been the mayor of Richmond. He has been a lieutenant governor of Virginia, the governor of Virginia, a senator. He's been a civil rights attorney. He's even been a Jesuit Roman Catholic missionary in Honduras for a year during his formative young adult years. He went to Harvard Law School. This is a man with a very long resume, and he brings a huge amount of that sort of competency element that Clinton clearly wants to highlight. And I think it's an interesting pick. But let me just say that if in terms of raw excitement and pizzazz, this is someone who can deliver a sharp political attack, but do so in such a way that you think, oh, he's still such a nice guy.
We know we have 6 months for these two candidates, and VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman perfectly positioned to watch it all. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, it's no surprise that DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz's resignation is trending on social media at this hour. My colleague G. Abby Lee is right here in the studio with the latest buzz online. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. It's a lot to digest on the eve of the Democratic National Convention. And some people are saying online that this could hurt the Democratic Party in a significant way. The main Twitter account to follow on this story is WikiLeaks verified account at WikiLeaks. And it sent out dozens of tweets in the last 24 hours and retweeted many media reports on its latest findings. And some of its original tweets, apart from sharing links to its website, of course, are elaborations on its latest findings. Here's an example. Hashtag DNC leak. WikiLeaks chose the publishing date. As usual, we published as soon as the documents were verified and as fast as resources permitted. Another one reads like this. Broadcasters so far implicated in hashtag DNC leaks, MSNBC, CBS. Broadcasters so far not covering DNC leaks, MSNBC, CBS. In a particular tweet sharing a link to the more than 19,000 leaked emails, it also used hashtag Hillary2016 and hashtag feel the burn.
All right, well, let's move on to the responses. Mm-hmm. What's the Sanders campaign tweeting about?
Absolutely nothing so far. But offline, Sanders went on ABC TV on Sunday morning and called for Schultz's resignation. But guess who is prolific on Twitter about the latest development? Surprise, surprise, Donald Trump.
Of course.
One of his many tweets on the issue reads like this. Sorry, folks, but Bernie Sanders is exhausted. Just can't go on any longer. He's trying to dismiss the new emails and DNC disrespect. Sad. Within 8 hours, more than 22,000 people liked that tweet.
Well, how about some of the other reactions?
Here's a popular tweet from Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. Her handle is at R. Weingarten, and she wrote this. Much of the content of DNC leaks was inappropriate, full stop. As a DNC member, I sincerely apologize to Bernie Sanders for this behavior. Jim, it seemed like the overall sentiment of the Democratic side seems to be that acknowledging Schultz's resignation as the right thing to do. Back to you.
All right. Thanks for the great wrap-up, G. You may tweet us your comments and questions to our Twitter stream. That's found at VOA_IE. Myself and G are on Twitter at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia at this hour, a day of mourning in Afghanistan after 80 killed in Islamic State bombing. Thousands march in funeral for slain Cambodian opposition leader. U.S. military pushes for closer ties with Chinese military. Calming the waters, the United States increases diplomatic efforts in ASEAN meetings. Local government officials banning minors from church in China. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on the VOAnews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The International Olympic Committee has decided against banning all Russian teams from competing in next month's Rio Olympics over allegations of an elaborate doping scheme. Speaking on Sunday, IOC President Thomas Bach said the committee stopped short of a collective ban.
We have decided today that no Russian athlete can compete in the Olympic Games Rio 2016 unless he or she meets some very strict criteria. For instance, we decided that the presumption of innocence cannot be applied to Russian athletes. The international sports federations will carry out an individual analysis of each athlete's anti-doping record, taking into account only reliable international tests. That means Russian tests cannot be taken into consideration.
Bach said the action is intended to protect the rights of individual Russian athletes who have not used illicit drugs to gain advantage in international competition.
Every human being is entitled to individual justice. There we have set the bar to the absolute limit for how Russian athletes can achieve to compete in Rio. All of them have to meet individually these number of very strict criteria we have established today.
In Moscow, Russian Sports Minister Vitaly Mutko voiced relief that the IOC did not impose the countrywide ban called for last week by the World Anti-Doping Association in a wide-ranging report that was spawned by a Russian whistleblower. A scathing WADA report issued last week said more than 30 Russian sports had gained advantages from government-backed schemes to manipulate anti-doping rules. Finance ministers from the group of 20 major economies have pledged to boost the global economy, which they say is showing a weak recovery. Delegates meeting in the Chinese city of Chengdu issued a statement Sunday at the end of their two-day gathering, expressing concern about Britain's plan to leave the European Union and just how Brexit will affect the world's economy. They said, however, member nations are well positioned to proactively address the potential economic and financial consequences from such developments. Britain's new finance minister, Philip Hammond, told fellow ministers concerns about his country's withdrawal from the EU should diminish once London lays out a future vision of how Britain will relate with the rest of Europe. Several ministers urged Britain and the EU to move quickly to resolve Brexit issues.
Our economy has suffered a shock from the referendum vote. It wasn't expected. And as the figures that we've seen today show, that has had an impact on confidence. We will respond to that in the way that is necessary to support the economy.
The G20 finance ministers also vowed to reject trade protectionism, which became a prominent issue at the meeting since U.S. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has said that he wants to revamp the country's trade deals, adding various restrictions. U.S. Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew, speaking Sunday in Chengdu, said the American economy is currently strong amid a weaker global economy.
There was considerable discussion of the outlook for the global economy, particularly in the wake of last month's referendum in the United Kingdom. There's a broad agreement that financial markets remained orderly and that financial reform had added important resiliency to financial institutions. Overall, the general sense was that the outlook remains uncertain, with a continued shortfall in aggregate demand.
The closing G20 statement expressed the importance of reducing the excess production of steel, which has led to a glut on the global market. The issue is of major concern between China and its trading partners, who say that Beijing exports steel at unreasonably low prices. The African Union launched the African Passport this week at its summit meeting in Rwanda. This idea is to allow better movement of people to stimulate African economies, but details of just who will get the passport and what the benefits are still need to be worked out, as Nick Long reports from Kigali.
Outgoing AU Commission Chairperson Kuzazana Dlamini Zuma gave the first two passports to the African Union Chairman and Chadian President Idriss Deby and to her host, the President of Rwanda, Paul Kagame. She told heads of state there have been overwhelming requests for the passport from many of their citizens.
So we would therefore suggest for your consideration as we launch the African passport today that we agree to create conditions in the member states to issue the passport to their citizens within their national policies as and when they are ready.
The AU's deputy chairperson, Erastus Muencha, told media that no member state has opposed the passport proposal, but the AU's Trade and Industry Commissioner, Fatima Haramachil, said a few member states don't recognise it. Who gets the passport will depend on each government, Haramachil explained.
They can decide to give it to, you know, good business people that they think that, you know, can, you know, invest all across the continent and so forth. But the ultimate goal, as I said, is really to make sure that, you know, everybody move living.
One interested businessman is Kenyan Kenfield Griffith. His company, M-Survey, has done a mobile opinion poll of 167 Kenyans that found 88% approve of the passport.
I mean, it'll be very useful for me, for instance, whereas we're trying to scale across the continent. It may expedite visa processes. It could be a way of having that primary information already on that person. So when, you know, they show their Africa Union passport, you know, it expedites the process of getting the visas because they're already in the system.
Another businessman, Zimbabwean Alvin Musengesi, hopes the passport will effectively become an AU work permit.
I hope that the AU passport turns into something like an EU passport so that if I decide that I want to, you know, set up a business and look at a certain region to optimize my business operations, I can set up without any complications.
There are technical challenges ahead for some countries to issue the passport, and immigration is a major concern for many. Judging by social media, a minority of Africans disapprove of the passport, many are skeptical they will ever get one, and many see the initiative as a step in the right direction. Nick Long for VOA News, Kigali.
You may visit voanews.com for more on this story. Be sure to follow us on Twitter as well, at @VOA_IE. And while you're online, like us on Facebook, at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hit makers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. To be a superstar in the music business these days, it's just not enough to have a great voice and a lot of talent. You also have to build a great social media presence. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald goes right to the top with one of the best examples.
You got me sipping on something I can't compare to nothing.
We are going to be talking about Selena Gomez and her mastery of social media.
And she is all over social media. I saw her on Twitter with a picture of her fans today.
That's right. She really knows how to use social media. And, you know, Jim, you and I, we came up in the 70s and 80s where if you were a musician and you weren't on tour, you were hoping to angle for a nice fat record deal, and that would pretty much pay the bills. But as we know, today album sales are not what they used to be. The album market's pretty much cratered unless your name is Adele or Taylor Swift.
Right.
But you can still make money if you're a savvy musician and you're one of the lucky few. Now, I want to concentrate on Selena Gomez because when it comes to personal branding, she's one of several celebrities, and they're all female, who dominate social media these days. Measurement company DeMarie Analytics just ranked the top social influencers. All of them are women, and Selena is number one. They say that Selena Gomez is worth $550,000 per post.
Wow.
When messaging across Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Selena is the most followed person on Instagram. Right now she has more than 90 million followers. Now, the CEO of DeMarie Analytics, Frank Spatafora, says that Gomez isn't necessarily getting $500,000 to post. what she is getting is negotiated between her agents and the company she promotes. Mm-hmm. Right now, Selena Gomez has deals with Coca-Cola, Pantene Shampoo, and Kmart stores. Spadafore says one reason she's successful is that she's smart. She's very subtle about how she uses social media to promote these products. She knows that saturating her feeds with promotion could negatively impact her relationship with her fans. She doesn't want to be seen as a shill, so she has fewer contracts than some of her contemporaries. But the advertisers get more mileage out of it, mm-hmm. because Selena's fans believe she honestly likes the stuff that she's using. I mentioned that she's the number one person on Instagram. She also has 60 million likes on Facebook and 44 million Twitter followers.
Selena provides a pretty good business model here. Less is more, mm-hmm. as she is very selective about her posting, mm-hmm. and she appears very genuine when she is using these products.
That's right. Selena Gomez has always projected a very likable image. People have watched her grow up. I mean, she was a Disney star when she was a girl. The social media market is evolving. It's very turbulent. It's kind of like the Wild West. It has opportunities, but it also has huge pitfalls.
Lots of opportunities each and every week for you to listen to our Top 20 Countdown with our host, Ray McDonald.
You can hear it Thursdays on VOA1, and you can also follow me on my Twitter feed at Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
Selena Gomez is, of course, very popular. So is full coverage of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia this week. You'll find it right here on VOA, on International Edition, and online at voanews.com, our Twitter stream at VOA_IE, and also on Facebook at VOA Now. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. is providing nearly $800,000 in aid to help Mongolians mitigate the effects of the 2015-2016 winter emergency and develop systems to increase disaster preparedness. This new funding is in addition to $150,000 in humanitarian assistance provided to support logistics operations and the distribution of critical relief supplies to those affected by the winter emergency, and expands ongoing disaster preparedness training with province and county-level officials. Through the U.S. Agency for International Development's Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance, USAID/OFDA, the U.S. government partners with Mercy Corps to work with communities to recover from the impact of the winter emergency and support the long-term sustainability of herding systems across 15 winter emergency-affected provinces. The program will improve province and county-level ability to manage risks and lessen the impact of future winter emergencies through disaster risk reduction, DRR training, and the scale-up of a national SMS, or short message-based information sharing system. This system, easily accessible by mobile phone, allows herders to access weather forecast data by equipping them with the tools to make informed decisions and develop disaster preparation strategies. Since 2011, the U.S. has provided approximately $2.5 million for DRR programs in Mongolia through USAID/OFDA, including school-based disaster planning to prepare school administrators and students for disasters, as well as incident command system training to help local officials improve disaster response operations. Winter conditions in Mongolia can be exceptionally harsh and dangerous. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Mongolia, to help the Mongolian people meet the challenge of any winter emergency.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.